In the world of manufacturing, change is the only constant. How are small and medium-sized manufacturers, SMMs, to keep up with new technologies, regulations, and other important shifts, let alone leverage them to become leaders in their industries? Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC, highlights leaders from the modern world of manufacturing, from SMMs to consultants to industry experts. Each quarter, we go deep into topics pertinent to both operating a manufacturing firm and the industry as a whole. Join us to hear about the manufacturing sector's latest trends, groundbreaking technologies, and expert insights to help SMMs in California set themselves apart in this exciting modern world of innovation and change. I'm Greg Profesich, Director of Advanced Manufacturing Technologies at CMTC, and I'd like to welcome you. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Satyendra K. Gupta, Smith International Professor in the Aerospace and Mechanical Engineering Department in the Viterbi School of Engineering at the University of Southern California, where he is also the Director of the Center for Advanced Manufacturing. I'm also joined by Craig Schlinoff, Group Leader of the Cognition and Collaboration Systems Group and Program Manager of the Measurement Science for Manufacturing Robotics Program in the Intelligent Systems Division at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, NIST. SK and Craig discuss the evolution and impact of robotics technologies, how to develop a roadmap for implementation, and their predictions for the future of robotics. Welcome, Craig. It's great to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Craig, can you take a minute or two and tell us a little bit about your current role?
Sure. I'm a program manager at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is part of the Department of Commerce in the U.S. My role is I lead the program focusing on manufacturing robotics. So we have about a $7.5 million program looking at different aspects of manufacturing robotics, anything from agility to perception to sensing to many other areas. And I'm also a first-level manager, which is a group leader at NIST, focusing on collaboration types of systems.
Thank you so much. Really great to have you here today. Welcome, SK. Glad to have you here as well.
Truly a pleasure. I'm very happy to participate.
So, SK, could you take a minute or two and tell us a little bit about yourself and your current role?
So, I'm a professor in Viterbi School of Engineering within the Department of Computer Science and Mechanical Engineering, and I also direct Center for Advanced Manufacturing at USC.
Thank you so much for being here. Really love the fact that your backgrounds are going to lend perfectly to what we're trying to talk about today. Looking forward to our conversation. Let's get started. We're here to talk a little bit about the evolution of robotics technologies in manufacturing. So let's kind of go back to the beginning. When did robotics technology start becoming integrated into manufacturing processes? SK, can you start us off?
Sure. So one of the earliest examples of robot deployment was a Unimate robot, which was deployed by General Motors in early 60s, and it was used in material handling application. And from there, robotics grew in many more applications.
So it's been around 60 years and counting from its infancy to the current state, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. Craig, anything you'd like to add along those lines?
There's been, I think, pretty dramatic growth in robotics over the last decade or so. It's been around for quite some time, but I think this is about the time frame where we're really seeing a lot of the benefit that it's provided.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the current trends. As robotics technologies evolve, and like you said, the last 10 years has been a very quick part of the evolutionary period, and they're adopted more broadly, what impact do you expect them to have on businesses and on society in general?
So robotics are not going to be able to do everything, right? There's certain things that they're good at. But one of the things that I think would be most impactful, I think, for society in general is that they're likely going to take away some of the more mundane jobs that people tend to do. So to give you a story, about 5 or 10 years ago, I went to a factory. And in the factory, there was a lady. And the lady's job was to pick up a part from one table and take a couple steps and move it over to another table. And she did that thousands of times per day. And that was her job. Those are the types of jobs that robotics are very good at. And those are the kind of jobs that typically people don't want to do. So in speaking with the person that was running the factory, they mentioned that they had a very high turnover in that type of position because it's a boring job, for lack of a better way of saying it. And there's a lot of repetitive motion and things that people don't want to do. So that's just one example of how I think it's going to impact businesses and society is that it's going to take jobs that often people don't want to do, that are repetitive and mundane, and we're going to be able to automate them to free them up to do more interesting jobs.
So have the robots do the dirty, Dell, and dangerous, right? The 3D trifecta for robotics, and really free humans up for more creative things that affirm our dignity, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned dangerous, and dangerous is a big part of that as well. Is there's a lot of jobs dealing with chemicals and gases and things of that sort that are not safe for people to do. And for those types of jobs, robotics, I think, will play a big role in not only doing things safely, but also, as you said, freeing up people to do more important jobs or maybe different jobs.
So SK, how would you add to that?
So basically, three different other dimensions to it. So one is that we get significantly superior quality as a result of robot being consistent. So robot does the same thing over and over, and therefore you get very consistent performance, and that then leads to superior quality. The second challenge that we seem to be seeing nowadays is that fluctuations in demand. So when demand fluctuates, staffing very quickly with human workers and then basically letting them go when your demand goes the other direction is challenging. So while if you have robots, it gives you significant capability to handle demand fluctuations. If you have a robot, you can start a second shift with no problem, third shift, no problem. So it gives you that, you know, inherent capabilities of dealing with demand fluctuation. And finally, robots can do things which human cannot. So it gives you an ability to transcend human abilities. So you can work in extreme cold environment. You can manipulate very small things. You can manipulate very large things. So once you can transcend human abilities, then that naturally leads to innovation. So I would add to making workplace safer, which Craig pointed out, to three other things, which is significantly improvement quality, ability to handle demand fluctuations, and enabling innovation.
So kind of connected to that, in my mind at least, there seems to be a perception in society that robots are going to take away people's jobs. And in some cases, like the task you mentioned, repetitive motion injuries, those tasks should be replaced, but not necessarily the jobs. You know, how do you put a cost on human suffering is kind of the issue there, right? So my understanding is that robots really can't replace us yet. So let's talk for a few minutes about the realities of robotics capabilities. What can and can't they do?
So let me start by saying that robots will never, in my opinion, completely replace humans. So you said a little while ago that robots haven't replaced humans yet. I don't believe they're ever going to replace humans. There's things that humans can do that I don't believe that robots ever will be able to. And things such as kind of deep understanding and reasoning about the environment and be able to take steps based upon new situations that they're confronted with. So robots are taking steps in that direction, but I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where they're going to replace humans. What they are good at now are things, as I mentioned before, is very repetitive tasks with low variability, and that's really the place that we want to start. And the robots are performing those types of operations now. And they're doing it primarily in the areas of things such as packaging and palletizing and material handling and welding and assembly. They're starting to get to the point where they can handle variability. So variability in the sense that parts are in slightly different locations than they thought they were expected to be, or you need to put things together a little bit differently. And they're starting to move in that direction, but nowhere close to the point of being comparable to what a human can do. So in summary, there will always be a need for humans, but I think robots are starting to get to the point where they can be a little bit more creative and a little bit more intelligent, but still their strength right now is in the repeatable low variability tasks.
SK, what do you have to add to that?
So robots are very good in terms of being able to move things. But if you require tasks that require dexterity, where it becomes extremely important to interact with the objects in a controlled manner, so now that brings in immediately ability to sense, and based upon that sensing, react. So now if you think about taking a soft object or some compliant object and you start manipulating it, you cannot pre-program a motion that a robot can follow. I mean, robot has to start interacting with it, feel it, sense it. So since robots' ability to think and sense are limited, the robot have excellent ability to move. They can apply a lot of force. They can move at a very high speed. They're very accurate. However, their ability to sense and their ability to think is very limited. So that means that any task that requires, in addition to motion, thinking part and sensing part, that's where robots are currently not very good at.
So I hear you guys say that something like, you know, picking a part out of a bin can be very difficult for a robot, right? A human 3-year-old could walk up and grab just one piece, but a robot can't go in and grab a piece unless it can sense and figure out which way the piece is oriented and figure out how to orient the gripper or the end effector that has to go in and grab it. It's those kind of things that are very complex to program a robot to do, sense, respond, adapt and adjust on a regular basis, that we do quite naturally. Is that what I hear you saying?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right.
So, Craig, I now understand better why you say they'll never take our jobs, right? Because there's a lot of computing power. And how do you plan for every eventuality of what they could run into, right? A robot could run into. Put a robot on a moving cart and move it around the shop. It still has to sense its environment and has to adjust to every and adapt to every change, right? We're built for that adaptation. They're not.
And it's really amazing to think how, it's just like what you said, how what goes into a human's brain and what they think about when they have to do what we consider to be very simple tasks. Picking something up, knowing how heavy it is, knowing how far the human can reach, knowing where they need to put it, knowing where they need to grasp it. Things that we do naturally, a two-year-old does naturally, mm-hmm. is very, very complicated for a robot to do because of all the knowledge that needs to go into that in order for it to do it.
Well, I feel better now. My job is safe. So let's talk a little bit about implementations. I know a lot of large companies have implemented robots to a positive ROI. What are some examples of robotic technologies or initiatives that can have a positive ROI today for the smaller manufacturer?
So there are tasks such as material handling, machine tending, inspection, where you can deploy a robot and where user themselves can program the robot. I mean, you don't need to hire a system integrator to program the robot. So there are tasks which, you know, user can themselves program the robot, and therefore you can see immediate benefit of deploying the robot and see positive ROI.
So material handling, inspection, palletizing, I'm assuming, machine tending, those kind of things?
Yeah.
And what makes those applications able to get to a positive ROI? Is it the state of the technology? Is it the ease and consistency of the job that's being done?
Usually many of these tasks just require a single robot. So you're not trying to coordinate among lots of different machines. Mm-hmm. And your motion accuracy need not be super precise. When you come close enough to the part, when the gripper closes or suction gripper, you know, positions over the part, you can still grab the part. So you have quite a bit of tolerance in terms of what level of accuracy you need from the robot. And therefore, programming becomes much, much easier. And also, there's a pattern. So even though you may be processing different parts from day to day, but the motion patterns remain very, very similar in nature. So your cells are simple. You're very tolerant to the kind of accuracy that you need in your motion. And generally, the motion pattern that robot needs are very similar. And therefore, programming becomes much, much easier, and system integration is not a big challenge. So those are the commonalities shared by those applications.
So we're looking for those places where there's a similar motion path and a similar level of accuracy or error allowed for the end effector to be able to grab and manipulate the part.
That's correct.
So to go off on just a bit of a tangent, we're starting to use some terms here I want to make sure everybody is comfortable with. If I was a small manufacturer and went out and bought a robot, I would buy just the arm, correct?
You will buy an arm, and if necessary, you will buy a small PLC and a small camera if you're going to be doing machine tending.
Right. Okay. So for machine tending, likely a camera. But then there's the robot manufacturers out there in the world, the ABBs, the Fanucs, the Yaskawas, the Productive Robots, the Universal Robots. They produce the arm, but they don't put the hand on the end of it, right? So we talk about the end effector, and what are some of the different types that can be applied to a given robotic arm?
There's kind of standard types of robot grippers. There's vacuum grippers. So they work on a vacuum where they go and vacuum goes into effect and it sucks up the part and attaches to it. There's kind of pinch grippers or two-finger grippers where they can go and just one finger on each side and pick up a part. And those are more of the standard types of grippers. But sometimes, depending upon the application, you need very specialized grippers. Grippers that are made specifically for the part that you're trying to pick up, depending upon how you want to pick it up. And those get to be a little bit more expensive, a little bit more time-consuming in order to produce, but very customized towards your type of part, depending upon what type of accuracy you need, similar to what SK was talking about earlier.
How would you guys think about knowing, if you were a small manufacturer, if robotics is right for a given kind of production environment?
So I think the person would need to step back and look at the types of activities they're performing within their factory or within their shop floor. And there's likely different types of activities. And kind of going back to what I mentioned before, the repetitive tasks, low variability is where you want to start. It doesn't mean necessarily where you need to finish, but where you want to start. So if you look at how robots have been used in large manufacturers, they're typically types of activities that the robot does tens or hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of times over and over again, like auto manufacturers and things of that sort. I'm not suggesting that a small manufacturer is going to create tens of thousands of objects. Maybe they are, but maybe they won't. But the important part is, as SK was talking about before, is to look at things that you do over and over again, at least at some level of abstraction, just like the discussion before about picking up different types of parts and moving it over to a palette or things of that sort, even if they're different objects, it's the same type of activity. And so those are things that would lend well to robotics. So start with the low-hanging fruit. If there are large lot sizes, even better, because it does take some time to program the robot, and you want to make sure that the time that you put into programming the robot offsets the time benefit that you get by using it for the large lot sizes. And then work your way up, and then start looking at when there, maybe you don't do the exact same thing over and over again, but there's just slight variability, and maybe there's opportunities to apply robots to that as well. And one of the other things I want to mention is, even if you don't have a large lot size, even if it is a small lot size, if it's something that you believe that demand will increase for your product, that might be another good opportunity for robots. So if it's something that you're only selling a small amount of something, but you think that demand could increase by having programming that robot once, by having it do the right thing, you're able to increase your lot size with increased demand relatively easily because you already have the infrastructure in place.
So the lot size is a big portion of this potentially, because it really talks about the volume you'd be doing and the repeatability, right? I think implicit in that is the idea that robots require setups between different kinds of operations. If I set it up once and run it longer, I have a better chance of getting productivity out of it. That's the concept here?
That's in general, yes. Now, some of the robots are getting quicker and quicker to set up, but it still takes time. So you want to make sure you account for that time.
So in recent years, in the world of robotics, we've had a new term come into play, the cobot, the collaborative robot. Tell us a little bit about what collaborative robots are and what kind of impact they're having and what some of the benefits of cobots versus traditional robots might be.
Traditional robots, basically, you have to put them in cages to make sure that humans are physically separated from them. And therefore, there was no chance of robot accidentally causing injury to humans. So that meant that on the shop floor, you need a lot of space to put the robots around. You needed to put appropriate controls in place to make sure that humans and robot can be always be separated. So that limited the applications where you could deploy a robot, because there are many tasks on which you cannot completely automate it. And therefore, a portion of the task need to be done by human, a portion of the task need to be done by robot. And it would be very useful if human and robot can work on different facets of the task or different subtasks in close physical proximity. And that can open up new sets of tasks where robot can be deployed. So cobots or collaborative robots, they enable human and robot to work together in close proximity. These robots, by design, ensure that if a collision were to happen, first of all, you try to prevent collision actively between humans and robot, right? And even if a collision were to happen, then the injury to human will be very limited. And therefore, this opens up the possibility of humans and robot working in close proximity, and therefore, it expands the sphere of tasks where robots can be used.
What's the difference that makes the collaboration possible? What's the safety factor that comes in?
So there's standards that are out there. There's standards organizations that have published standards to say, what does it take to make a robot a cobot? So how do you know that it's safe to work around humans? The standards, there's one in ISO, which is 10218. There's one in ANSI and RIA, which is R1506. And they focus on a number of things. But the two main things that they focus on are something called force limiting and speed and separation monitoring. So force limiting is that if a robot gets too close to a human, it can't put a certain amount of force on that human. And there's all kinds of measures for what force it takes to cause pain within a human or injury or things of that sort. So make sure that if the robot's too close to the human, it can't exert over a certain amount of force. And speed and separation monitoring says that if a robot is too close to a human, it's got to slow down. So depending upon how far it is from the human, it would slow down so that if that happens, where the robot accidentally bumps into the human, it's going slow enough so that it doesn't hurt the human. So in order for these manufacturers that are developing robots to be able to say that they're collaborative robots, they have to show that they conform with these two standards. Now, that sometimes introduces some challenges, one of which is some of the robots that need to pick up very, very heavy things, like in an automotive manufacturer or something, it's almost impossible for them to be cobots because they need such force in order to lift these heavy objects that they can't really control that amount of force just to be able to pick up the object. And so they wouldn't be considered cobots. But there are many, many cobots that are out there that are usually able to lift lighter weights on the order of pounds or a few pounds that can conform to these specifications and therefore are able to be able to call themselves cobots.
So the force limiting and the speed and separation monitoring is the improvement that allows for the safety there. But there's a trade-off. Because it's moving slower and has less force, it can't pick up heavier objects or move objects at a velocity that might be necessary. So it will really depend on the application to decide cobot versus robot.
Yes. Safety issues in the application. Absolutely.
So let's switch gears just a little bit. From a business standpoint, what kind of improvements in cost, quality, and productivity would you expect to see from robotics? And I would imagine that this would vary based on the robotic application, palletizing versus machine tending type of thing. But what are some of the general categories of, you know, cost improvements, quality improvements, productivity improvements that we might see?
There are different dimensions to it, and it all depends upon what people are trying to do. So let's just kind of analyze one at a time. So in terms of cost, if you can speed up your operation as a result of using robots, then you can usually gain some benefits on cost. Also, if you do a holistic analysis and there are components of the work which may cause injury to humans or pose some risk to human health, then there is a gain in terms of cost. Also, if you can run a multi-shift operation, again, usually that can have significant impact on cost. So there are different facets through which deploying robot might give you cost benefit, but it may or may not happen depending upon the application. Now, if you think in terms of productivity, again, if you analyze it, the robot's ability to work much faster than a human, in some applications it's possible, robot can actually be significantly faster than human. So in that case, you can gain productivity benefits. In terms of quality, it usually comes as a result of consistency. So robots are significantly more consistent, and therefore your variability in your production reduces. So whether or not these benefits are going to be present depends to a great extent on applications.
So I think those are some great points, SK. The whole concept I think you were alluding to of like lights out operation, right? I currently run a one shift operation, but I have a robot now and I have a long product run. And so I queue up the robot at 4:45. I turn it on, it runs for 8 hours and I go home and have dinner. And we come back the next morning and quality parts are sitting there, right? So overhead is being absorbed, production is happening, but marginal costs are pretty low at that point, right? Those are the kind of things that we can get into when we use a robot and can get into creatively using it when it can produce quality consistently. Craig, anything to add to those, the cost, quality, and productivity benefits?
Just one thing. A lot of times people ask, what is the return on investment, right? I mean, how much is it going to cost for the robot and how long do I have to keep it running in order to make my money back? And as SK mentioned, it's highly dependent upon the application. There's robot manufacturers out there that claim that you can get your return on investment in 2 years. I can't verify that or not verify that, but that's what they claim. How much they cost is really highly dependent upon your application. So there's the cost of the robot itself, $25,000 to $60,000, usually in that ballpark. But then there could be other things that go along with it depending upon your application. So you mentioned before the end effectors or the grippers. If you can use the standard end effector or gripper, there's little to no cost there. If you need to come up with a specialized one, there's additional cost with that. At times, you might need some infrastructure around it for safety or workflow. Now, if you have the cobots, as we talked about before, that's less of a concern. But if you can't use the cobots, then safety becomes an issue. And building fences and using floor space take time and take money. And then there's questions of how easy is it to integrate? And that depends also on your application. There are robot integrators out there that will be more than happy to integrate the robot into your factory floor, but that costs money. And there's some that maybe what you're doing is simple and straightforward enough that you can take it out of the box and do it on your own. And some claim that you can do that in as quickly as 4 hours. So again, it depends on the application. And as SK mentioned, there's lots of variables, but just some things to consider.
Application dependent ROI, right? So the cost of the robot, I can get a fairly low cost collaborative robot with a standard end effector, and my cost is going to be pretty low. Integration is going to be mainly on the setup, right? Because cobots are largely user programmable. I've seen demonstrations where it's almost like hit the macro button, right? Press the red button, manipulate the robot with your hands, make it move through its motions, hit the red button again, and it saved all the moves. Now you can just repeat that. And then the safety indicators. So if I'm doing a palletizing application and I'm picking up 1 pound boxes and putting them on the pallets, that's a whole lot different robot payload, strength, safety requirements than if I'm picking up 100 pound cases, right? that robot doing 100-pound cases is probably going to need safety cages and those kind of things. So there's considerations based on the application. It gets into all those variables and how they come into the total cost picture. So if you were running a small or medium-sized manufacturing business, how would you go about developing a roadmap to identify and implement robotic solutions in your manufacturing process? Would you start in a particular place in the company? Would you start in a particular kind of operation? Are there some standard kind of off-the-shelf, tried-and-true, proven applications of robots? Where would you go?
So start small, basically, right? Start with applications which require, you know, least amount of integration. So begin with things where you use standard off-the-shelf robots and standard off-the-shelf grippers and standard off-the-shelf sensors with very simple integration. So start small. Make sure your workforce is ready, because sometimes the challenge is that you have deployed robots, and if you start having even slightest amount of challenges, you're not fully utilizing robots. I mean, your robots are sitting idle, which is then again is going to create significant challenges in terms of your ROI. And then build the right kind of culture. Because another challenge that often people face is that when people start introducing robots, and if the culture is not right and people are feeling threatened by the robots, adoption is not easy, because then people are always finding fault as to what robots are not doing, right? And that just creates, again, challenges for you. So you got to start small, make sure you have a right training for your workforce who's going to be interacting with the robots or maintaining them, and have the right culture where people see robots as helping your business and creating new opportunities for you and helping you grow.
Great points, SK. Crawl, walk, run, I think is what I hear you saying, right? Start off with something very simple, get your people used to it. Because if your people don't accept the robot, a more complex one is just going to be harder to implement and harder to get proven and harder to be organizationally accepted.
Yeah. So we have heard those horror stories from many people, right? They picked an operation, they deployed a $800,000 cell didn't work. And then when they called the system integrator, the cost of repair was $250 an hour, and therefore they could never use it. And now they kind of feel that robotics is useless.
Yes. And so if we start small and start building the organizational acceptance, right now I work on the production floor and I'm a machine operator. A year from now, if I see myself as a robotic technician and machine operator, I'm probably in good shape. If I still see myself as a machine operator who's in competition with the robot, we've got a problem. That organizational acceptance and building the right culture piece, I don't think it can be underestimated. There have been a few automation integrations that I've been part of where a vision system is supposed to check quality, and it does such a great job of checking quality that suddenly there's chewing gum on the lens because the operators downstream are working harder than they ever did before. And, you know, those kind of organizational acceptance issues type of thing, you have to have, you know, buy-in from everybody on the floor. You know, we talk a lot about the technology so far, but that cultural element, that organizational acceptance piece, the change management piece, I think, is incredibly important to mention. Craig, anything to add to what SK had said?
One thing that might be useful, especially for acceptance of people within the factory, is to focus the robot on the jobs that people don't want to do, assuming that it aligns with what they don't want to do. So things that are boring, that aren't safe, that are monotonous. And if you do that and the people realize they don't have to do that task anymore, that's also a nice selling point for having the robot there. And then the other comment is, there's two ways of looking at bringing robots, I think, for businesses. One of which is, I want to do what I'm currently doing, and I want to do it better and faster and cheaper. And then there's a second stage, which is, I want to grow my business. I want to grow into other areas. I want to be able to do additional things. And if you have a plan for how you want to grow, that can help you to better identify if a robot will work for you and what tasks it will work for. They're similar, but they're different in the sense that you're not just doing what you're doing better, but you're trying to figure out where the company wants to go and seeing if the robot aligns well with that.
Great ideas. So from an operations perspective, how long does it take to program a robot? And what kind of skills do I need to have? And it's probably a different question depending on the type of robot I implement. So let's talk about the different dimensions there. How long does it take to program, and what kind of skills do I need to have?
The answer to this question, like pretty much all the other questions, is it depends. It depends on how sophisticated of an operation you want the robot to do. As I mentioned earlier, some robot manufacturers claim that you can get their robot from the box integrated into your shop floor within 4 hours. That's true, I'm sure, but for more simplistic types of operations, and you don't need a robot integrator or anything to do that. But there's things that are much more complicated, right? And if you want to do things that require special end effectors that need high accuracy, some of the things that SK was talking about before, before, then it's going to take more time to get it up and to get it integrated. There's really three steps with a robot. It's programming it and getting it up and getting it working, and that takes time. There is operating. So once you have it programmed, running it and making sure it's doing the right thing and it's continuously doing the right thing. And there's maintaining it. And just like every other piece of equipment that's on the factory floor, every other piece of machine, things wear down, things sometimes get out of skew and don't work exactly the way that they're supposed to. And there's time that goes along with maintaining it. So all three of those things are necessary. As I mentioned earlier, robot integrators are available to help, and this is their specialty, and they do that kind of stuff, but it costs money. So it really depends upon the sophistication of your application and what you're trying to do. The robot manufacturers have gone out of their way to make the robots as user-friendly as possible. But what skills do you need? Certainly familiarity and comfort with equipment, right, which I imagine would happen in most places. They've tried to get away, for the most part, from programming skills, even though programming, you know, coding is useful and interesting. There's ways, as you mentioned earlier, to be able to teach a robot to do something without typing a line of code, but sometimes it gets more complicated and you need those skills. So it really depends on how you want to apply it.
Another dimension which is increasingly happening is sensor integration. People are interested in getting the sensor data to the robot, and also sometimes you have multiple different robots, or you have a robot being coordinated with the machine. So then you get into PLC, programmable logic controllers as well. So depending upon how complex your robotic cell is, whether it is going to be including external sensors, whether it'll include coordination with other robots or machines, this can get complicated. But the simplest robot, where you basically just, you know, demonstrate by holding the robot the motion it needs to perform and record and replay, is quite simple. So it can be anywhere from a few hours to a month, depending upon how complex things can get.
Right. So again, back to our crawl, walk, run approach. Pick the simplest thing, get some buy-in, learn those skills along the way, right? One of the concepts, I think, in the book Lean Robotics is do exactly that, right? Take a very simple application, but take your first robotic implementation as the first of a series of them where you're going to learn internally and start building that internal capability to understand where to apply it. There's always going to be systems integrators out there to help. But generally speaking, you probably want to be in a position where you can be deciding what you want to do based on your understanding and your expertise, not relying completely on someone else's. And so you start that journey with a simple application of a robot and then understand the technology. And as you understand the technology and application better, you can expand it into various other areas of opportunity within your operation. So let's talk a little bit about reliability. How reliable are robots? And what happens if they break down? How do I fix them? Do I need somebody on my staff? Talk about those concepts.
A robot is a machine, similar to the drill and the other machines that you have on the shop floor. And they work, for the most part, reliably, but they break sometimes. And when they break, they can break in multiple ways. Sometimes there's a person in the shop floor that says, oh, I've used this before and the drill bit broke or whatever it happens to be, and I know how to fix this, and they fix it and it's done. And sometimes it's much more complicated and you need to call the manufacturer and have the manufacturer come out. And if it's under warranty, that's great. And if it's not under warranty, there's usually a cost associated with it. But it's the same thing as other types of machinery that's on your shop floor. Now, obviously, robots are a little bit more sophisticated and there's more ways that they can break. So maybe there's slightly higher probability that they're going to break before the machinery that you have, but it's the same type of thing. Fix it where it's obvious what needs to be fixed, and if not, call in the company and have them fix it.
And the skills can be basic, you know, mechanical skills, I hear you saying, right? So replace a drill bit type of thing. If it's a mechanical skill and something obvious, you can fix it. If we don't know why, it's adding a step into the operation. It wasn't in the program before. It's probably going to require the expert who programmed it in the first place type of thing, right?
Right. So there is the mechanical side, which is exactly what you said. But robots are ideally somewhat more intelligent than, hopefully more intelligent than some of the other machinery. So there's a lot more to the software side as well. So if there's problems with the software, then you need to either have somebody on staff that's a whiz programmer, which many of these small manufacturers probably don't have, or you got to call in the company.
Building upon what Craig said, arms in general tend to be fairly reliable. And, you know, when you buy an arm, you can buy a, you know, extended warranty or service program where they will support any failure in the arm within a certain period of time. But then the failure could also happen at the, you know, your processing end of it. You're doing something with, you know, gripper fails or something else happens. Good. Your chances that failure would happen where you are making contact with the world are much higher than, you know, your failure chances with the arm itself. So you have to kind of take a look at it, where the failures are happening. Is it at the sensor level? Is it at the arm level? Is it at the end effector level? Is it the, you know, end of arm tooling that you're using that's kind of failing? Or, you know, something has gone wrong with your program that you were using to run it. So depending upon the failure, you need different kind of interventions
Right. So I think I hear you saying that between the two of you that, you know, some things, a simple mechanical thing, the screws obviously lay on the floor right below where the place was a screw hole empty. I could put the screw back in and fix that. The simple mechanical stuff we can do internally. Some stuff is going to require outside help, but there are experts either at the machine manufacturer, the end effector manufacturer, or the integrator who could help bridge that gap and support you in that way. Buying a robot, you're not alone. There's an ecosystem that can support long-term maintenance and repair. So we talked a little bit about this, but, you know, how do I ensure that it's safe for my employees to work around the robot?
So I think this is getting back to the discussion, as you mentioned, that we had earlier, is if you buy a cobot, collaborative robot, they are designed to be safe to work around people because they conform to the standard specifications that were mentioned earlier. And they're certified to do so. And it's not easy to be able to, for a manufacturer call their robot a cobot. They have to make sure they meet these specifications and show that they meet these specifications. So there's the implicit understanding that they will be safe around people because of the things we talked about earlier, because of limiting the amount of force, by going slower when they get close to the people, by the fact that most of them are carrying less weight, so there's less force and momentum to be able to hurt people if they knock into them. So if you're able to use cobots for your application, you can feel reasonable level of comfort that they're going to be safe around humans or other people within the shop floor.
Okay, so that's for the cobot case. How about the robot case?
So robot case, basically, if you're not keeping them in the cages, right, and if you're not, you know, basically ensuring that absolute human separation, you can always have a system integrator perform a risk assessment and kind of give you a report as to what the modalities are, what kind of risk it poses. And then you can basically develop the mitigation strategies to ensure that those risks remain manageable.
So if we do a safety risk assessment on a regular robot and it has a force and a velocity that would be dangerous to humans to be around, you can put it in a safety cage, you can put up a light curtain. There's many different ways to interrupt its processing, right, to make sure that it's a safe environment. So let's talk about some specific cases. For example, hypothetically, my company makes very customized products. Are robots good for that type of application when I've got many different things that are very custom?
It depends upon, you know, basically where that variability is coming from. So if you are, let's say, milling different kind of parts, and if you're using robot for machine tending, then absolutely, you could, you know, go ahead and deploy it. That's not an issue. Now, if you are going to be, let's say, performing some processing operation, and you're saying that, okay, I'm going to be welding different kind of structures, and I want to have a welding robot, things might be much more harder in that case, right? So it all depends upon where the customization in the product is coming from and what tasks are you trying to perform. So welding of, you know, different geometry is very different, the way robot need to move. On the other hand, if you're trying to do machine tending or you're trying to inspect a part, and even though there's a variability in the geometry, but the robot motion may be very similar in nature, and therefore it'll be much, much easier to deal with that variability in the context of that task, versus a processing task where a robot have to perform a fundamentally different task. So certain kind of variability is very easy to deal with, but certain kind of variability is challenging. So you have to kind of take a look at it, what kind of task we are talking about.
So it's more task dependent than product dependent or even business model dependent. Anywhere there's repetition of the same path, the same payload, et cetera, those are applications of robots, regardless of what I'm making.
Just to build off of what SK said, likening it again to a large manufacturer, like a car manufacturer. Right? If you look at the cars that are coming out of the plant, imagine all the options you can have on the car, right? So any two cars are likely not going to be exactly the same, but a lot of the fundamental processes to build those cars are the same. You still need to put a roof on it. You still need to put tires on it, even though the entertainment system might be different or whatever else. So just building off of SK's comment, depending where that customization is, robots still could be very, very useful, just maybe not for the details of where customization occurs.
Okay, makes sense. So let's talk a little bit about the future. Where do you both see robotics in the manufacturing sector over the next decade or so?
Sensing technology is getting cheaper and cheaper, and therefore you will see, you know, robot deployed with a lot of more sensors. And once the robot has the sensing modalities, then obviously they can do much more complex tasks than what they're able to do before. You're also seeing a lot of advancements in AI and machine learning. And those are then giving robots the ability to basically reason. And once the robot can reason, then again, you can push them in new application area where you are not able to see them today. You're also seeing a lot of improvement in user interfaces. So, you know, companies are now offering a smart pendant. People are talking about augmented reality. So there are lots of new modalities through which humans can interact with the robots. So all that, again, makes it much, much easier for people to program not just a robot, but also probably a cell. And we're also seeing, you know, new technology for human safety, because now you have much more reliable technology for tracking humans. So you can basically track human much more accurately. And therefore, you know, in future, hopefully some of your traditional style industrial robots, which are not considered human safe, you can actually interact with them in a very, very different mode than what you're allowed to do today. So sensing, AI, next generation user interfaces, and basically human safety are all different technology which are coming down the road. And all of these will have huge impact in terms of applications where robot can be used, and also the overall cost of acquiring a robotic cell or a robotic solution.
Greg, your thoughts?
Another way of looking at this is that the robot needs to do, at a minimum, three things, right? It needs to be able to sense the environment, it needs to be able to think, and it needs to be able to do. So SK talked about the sensing and some of the other areas also, but that's obviously the first step that, for the most part, if the robot can't see, likening it to humans, if a human can't see the environment, it's very tough to do things that are productive in it, unless it's very well scripted. And I think the sensing technologies are starting to get better and giving robots more knowledge in order to do that kind of stuff. From the thinking is what is my biggest area of interest, right? So robots are starting to get more intelligent. We're not going to see C-3PO or R2-D2 anytime soon, but they're able to do things that they weren't able to do before. And one of the things is, we're not there, but we're getting closer to robots figuring out how to perform a task without the person telling them what to do. So for example, by feeding in, I want this to be my end state. I want you to put this ball in this hole over here. And here's where the ball is, and here's where the hole is. Figure out a process in order to do that. I don't have to grab the robot's arm and move it around and tell it where to go. It can figure out the plans that it needs to go through in order to get from the current state of the world to the state of the world that you want it to be in. And we're taking steps in order to get closer to doing that. And by doing that, we're going to do things such as greatly decelerate how long it takes to get a robot up and running, because you just need to give it the state of the world and it can figure out how to perform the tasks that you want it to do. And then the do side obviously builds from that. These are planning types of applications and actuation, and robots are getting more capable in what they can grasp and what they can move around. And so I think we're seeing a lot of work going on there as well. So everything that SK said, I agree with, just providing a little bit more context. And I think the thinking side is the side that we're really going to see a lot of the benefit from moving forward, very comparable to a human. And then one quick story is another factory that I went to. I seem to go to a lot of factories, but one other factory that I went to, we were walking around. It was a large factory. And as the guy was showing us around, we heard sirens go off and lights flash. And we said, you know, what's going on? He says, excuse me for one second. And he walked over to one of the robots where the lights were flashing and the sirens were going off. And he pushed the e-stop button and he grabbed a part that happened to be in a light curtain. So essentially, it was a light curtain to make sure that that part was in the right general area for the robot to pick up. And it didn't quite get into that area. And so that light curtain, the laser was broken to show that it wasn't in that part. And the person went and took that part, slid it over about 3 inches so that it was in the area in which it was supposed to be, closed the door, push resume, and the robot was able to continue. So something as simple as a part being a little bit off skew caused the factory at that point to shut down for a moment, so the person had to go in and fix that. And those are things that, again, doing the analogy with a two-year-old, the two-year-old could probably figure out, I need to move something over in order to get that to work. So a part of that thinking of understanding where things are going wrong and what the robot itself can do in order to fix it without setting off the alarms, I think is where we're going in the robotics world.
So we've covered an awful lot of ground today, and I thank you both for all of your insights and your ideas here and sharing with us. I'm going to try to do a quick summary here. And so in terms of, you know, if I was a small manufacturer, the things that I would be thinking about in considering robots, are they right for me, is, you know, first start off with the dirty, dull, and dangerous jobs. where can I use a robot that is, you know, going to replace operations and tasks that people don't like to do, places where I have high turnover, places where I have the risk of or a frequency of lost time injuries and workers' compensation claims, those kind of things. Start there to really start recognize the benefit and really get the full value of a robot, because the robot's not going to suffer any of those injuries. Robots are great for flexibility and consistency in operation. They allow for innovation. They can do things with high quality and high precision. Repetitive tasks with low variability is kind of the sweet spot as a good starting place. And then you can go somewhere else with your future robotic implementations from there. Robots are making advances, and I think we just wrapped up in the last part of the conversation some of the advances in the future, but they're likely never to replace humans, even with all the advances in AI, vision, sensors, etc. Getting to the point of being equal to the skills of a human 2 or 3 year old is quite a challenge. And so do things that are repetitive, that are low variability. Things like material handling, inspection tasks, machine tending, palletizing, operations where there are similar motion paths. And those parts or those things that are being moved by the robot or manipulated by the robot should have a similar payload, if you will, a similar weight and size characteristics. Look for larger lot sizes in my operation if I'm a small manufacturer looking at this, right? The longer the production run, the more chance that the robot will be able to deliver quality consistently and help me with the return on investment. And also opportunities for that lights out operation that I think SK mentioned, right? So if I can set up the robot for 10 minutes before the end of the shift and turn it on and let it run for 8 hours and go home and have quality parts produced, that is all product that falls straight to margin. So it's a great opportunity for getting to the ROI. Cobots versus robots. You know, cobots have some safety features built in terms of force limiting and speed and separation monitoring that they have to do. So if you buy something that is certified as a cobot, you have those pieces built in. If you buy something that is not, it's a robot, and there will be some safety considerations. But there are ways to mitigate risks, and integrators can help with those risk mitigation plans to help get safety cages or light fences or whatever the appropriate safety equipment in place to make sure that it's a safe environment. Productivity, robots can work much faster than humans in some cases and can deliver more consistent product, which impacts the quality. So, you know, the ROI, though, is going to be dependent on the cost of the robot, the end effector that's used, and is it standard, is it custom, the integration, and the safety consideration. So it's not just the cost of the robot to consider, but you have to look at all four of those things. But there are some simple, almost packaged solutions that robot makers and integrators have put together that can solve some of those problems and get to a very reasonable cost. You know, if I was starting out, the advice I heard was start small. Use the standard robotic arm, use a standard gripper, use a standard software, and make sure the workforce is ready. Make sure they understand why we're doing this and how it's a benefit to them. And you know, a third piece of that is really build that culture. Make sure you gain the organizational acceptance, do the change management work to make sure that it all comes through. In terms of programming and maintaining the robot, you know, the programming is going to depend on the application. Some cobots and robots have very user-friendly interfaces that don't require writing code. Some are more complex. And so it's going to be application-dependent to see what that level is. Programming, operating, and maintaining the machine, like any other piece of equipment, those are the steps, right? It has to be set up, it has to be operated, it has to be maintained. And so, you know, in terms of skills for that, programming, if it's user-friendly enough, your internal people can do it or can learn it very easily. You may need an integrator or a programmer up front to get started. In terms of maintaining, some tasks are going to be, you know, easy and mechanical to fix for your maintenance crew. Some are going to require more advanced skills. It's going to be a trade-off and really be dependent upon the individual application and situation. And then the future of robots is, you know, sensor technology is becoming less expensive. And so that in combination with artificial intelligence and machine learning is increasing a robot's ability to learn and to think and to almost reason. And so as those advance, the application of robotics and the ability to apply it to a wider set of problems to solve is going to grow. Did I miss anything in that summary? Is there anything else you want to add or correct? Did I misstate?
Pretty good.
That's an amazing summary. So well done.
Great job.
Well, thank you both for being here. I really, really appreciate you being here today. I learned a lot from this conversation, and really, I want to thank you for joining me and for sharing your perspectives and insights and expertise with me and with our listeners.
My pleasure to be here.
It's truly a pleasure to participate.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining me with this conversation with Craig Slenoff and SK Gupta in discussing Robotics in the Small Manufacturer Part 1, the Evolution of Robotics Technologies in Manufacturing. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Stay safe and healthy. Thank you for listening to Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and post it on your social media platforms. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast directory. For more information on our topic, please visit www.cmtc.com/shiftinggears. CMTC is a private nonprofit organization that provides technical assistance, workforce development, and consulting services to small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout the state of California. CMTC's mission is to serve as a trusted advisor, providing solutions that increase the productivity and competitiveness of California's manufacturers. CMTC operates under a cooperative agreement for the state of California with the Hollings Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program, MEP, at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology within the Department of Commerce. For more information about CMTC, please visit www.cmtc.com. For more information about the MEP National Network, or to find your local MEP center, visit www.nist.gov/MEP.